This is Word of Mouth on New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. Coming up today, a proliferation of puppets. A new production at the Hop brings the low-tech craft to the hyper-wired generation. And on the origins of American celebrity, the scandals, marriages, and activism of the Civil War-era actress, pinup, and media darling Ada Menken. But first, getting ahead of today's media red herrings. News of the New Hampshire primary gives pundits plenty to chew on this week. In the coming months, momentum will flag, barbs will be traded, and campaign buses will roll on. Absent an imminent vote or sex scandal, media makers occasionally flirt with tantalizing uncertainties, or as Steve Kornacki calls them, political red herrings, to grab attention. Steve is news editor for Salon.com, and he wrote about the five biggest non-stories you'll hear far too much of during campaign 2012, none of which will amount to a hill of beans. Steve, welcome back to Word of Mouth.
It's good to be here.
Okay, so the ingredients here, sexy headlines, all plausible, all not going to happen. Have I got that right?
Yeah, and I think kind of, big names who sort of straddle that line between politics and celebrity, I think that helps too.
So is it fair to blame the media for coming up with these red herrings, or the parties, the blogosphere, a combination?
Well, you know, I mean, we could blame the media and say it's just all a pointless distraction. But I think it's true too, and that people do like to talk about these things. I mean, some of them drive me nuts, not just because the media will bring them up, but because I'll hear about them, you know, casually from people. I mean, for instance, the number one that I put on the list was the idea of Hillary Clinton switching in for Joe Biden as Barack Obama's running mate this year. I don't have much money, but I would bet all of it that is just absolutely not going to happen for four or five, I think, pretty good reasons. But I'm still amazed at the number of people, whether it's just friends or family or neighbors or whatever, people I'll just see sort of casually in social settings who will just talk about it like it's this possibility that, you know, or probability even. And I think that the chance is about 0%.
Well, let's get to your second. During the first GOP debates, talking heads seemed to grapple for a candidate that they could really get behind. Now, here's The Daily Show's Jon Stewart. He's razzing pundits here for, let's call it, creative interpretations of New Jersey Governor Chris Christie's clear decision not to run.
I'm not running. I'm 100% certain I'm not going to run. I don't want to run. I don't feel like I'm ready to run.
First, you have to have in your heart, you got to want it more than anything else. More than anything else. I don't want it that badly.
Interpret that for us, oh great political pundits.
New Jersey Governor Chris Christie appears to leave the door slightly open.
Christie left the door slightly open for himself.
Chris Christie has left the door open ever so slightly.
Well, he left like a sliver open. He left a little sliver open.
Christie's comments especially are a Rorschach test. You see what you want to see, hear what you want to hear.
You hear what you want to hear. Everyone else hears, I'm not running.
Okay, Steve Kornacki, coming to a headline near you very soon, Chris Christie as vice presidential candidate.
Yeah, no, I think that's another one that's not going to happen. I mean, one of the reasons I would simply say is that if Mitt Romney is going to be the nominee, you look at a guy like Chris Christie, who's a Northeast moderate, that just exacerbates, you know, Romney's problems with the perception that he's a Northeast moderate. You look at the potential of Chris Christie to overshadow you on the campaign trail. You look at he's sort of a volatile guy. You never know what he's going to say. And frankly, Chris Christie, everything I can tell about him, has no real interest in being vice president. But I have to say, you know, listening to those Stewart clips, it is funny. I mean, the media loves the Veep stake story every 4 years, because these nominating contests will end in late winter or early spring, and then we've got months to fill before the conventions. And, you know, I talk about how these red herrings often involve, you know, names and celebrities, and, you know, there's nothing better from that standpoint than the Veep stakes, where, you know, it's just one name after another, and try to match this person up with this nominee. And so I understand why the media does that. The one thing I'd say about Chris Christie, though, is he does encourage it himself a little bit, because he may have been pretty clear cut in all of those clips, but he was also clear cut for all of 2010 and 2011 that he didn't want to run for president. And then when the pressure mounted more and more, he did step back from it. He did consider it. He did have that week where he decided, you know what, I am actually going to think about this. So politicians contribute to it themselves, too.
Okay, so on to number three, another imaginary candidate who never seems to go away, the Donald. What makes this a plausible story?
There is nothing plausible about this. This is a guy who plays, basically at this point in his career, he plays a businessman and he plays a sort of politician on television, but he is fundamentally a television character. But again, he's one of those, you know, he's a recognizable guy who increasingly is going to say, you know, sort of startling, provocative things. And so there's, you know, there's barely a television producer out there who can resist the temptation to put Donald Trump on. And so Donald Trump will keep saying, his new thing is I might run as an independent for president this year. So that buys him until, you know, May or June to make up his mind about that. But I had a contest on Salon earlier this year where I checked the value of my savings account and I bet it that Donald Trump would not run for president. And I'll happily do that again.
Well, you know, this is one of those things that flirting with an unrealistic campaign possibility, it's easier, as you're suggesting here, to get a soundbite than to do the real service to the public of informing them about the issues, going through the eating the spinach, as we say in the business, really making helping people understand the issues. Is it just easier to talk about these implausible things?
Oh, you know, absolutely. I mean, I think if you look at what Trump is a really good example of this, because it's not just the celebrity aspect of him. I mean, that's why the media gravitates toward him. But then when you listen to what he's saying now and what he said for the last year or two, the issues, if you want to call them that, that he raises are basically all rooted in, I mean, there's no other word for it, falsehoods. And, you know, birtherism is a sort of a prime example. You know, he made that more than anybody else. He's the one who made that sort of mainstream. Now, you could say in a backhanded way, maybe he made a valuable contribution there because he created so much, you know, noise that it prompted the White House to put that even more definitive birth certificate out. And I will say that since then, we probably haven't heard as much, you know, as much birtherism. But I don't think Donald Trump was trying to do a public service by bringing up birtherism. It just so happened that he was so successful in doing it and using the media to do it that he forced the White House to do something kind of dramatic.
Well, Steve, how about your fourth red herring? This is something we're already hearing a lot of talk about, that people, ideological conservatives, Tea Party members, are not going to turn out to vote for frontrunner Mitt Romney. Seems possible to me. What makes you think that they will?
I just think I've done a lot of writing about the you know, about sort of the emergence of the Tea Party and what that represents in politics today and what it sort of represents historically. And to me, I can't get beyond the conclusion that the Tea Party movement, which sprouted up in the early days of the Obama presidency, represents something that we see basically every time in the modern era when a Democrat becomes president. We've seen it with Obama. We saw it with Bill Clinton. We saw it with Jimmy Carter. We saw it with Lyndon Johnson and John F. Kennedy. And that is that the conservative base in this country really sort of retrenches and resists, and there's an awful lot of alarmism, and there's almost universal knee-jerk opposition on the right to anything and everything that the Democratic president says or does, and I think that backlash that we've seen so many times before didn't have a name in the past, but they came up with the Tea Party this time. But I think it's the same thing. So I to me, it's just all of that energy is fundamentally coming from opposition to and resentment of Obama. And if that's the case, then sure, I can understand the idea that the Tea Party folks aren't too happy with Mitt Romney. It's why he only got 24% in Iowa the other day. But if he is the candidate, and at the end of the day, it's a choice between four more years of Obama, the guy who gave rise to all of this, and getting rid of Obama, I cannot see how the energy isn't there to drive him out of office.
And Steve, with just a minute left, your last red herring is Obama. This is something that's certainly going to be played a lot during this campaign season. He'll finally come out in support of gay marriage. Why do you think it's not going to happen?
It seems too bold for this president and for this White House. You know, when they take risks, when they take gambles, they're extremely calculated risks and gambles. And, you know, I mean, here we are looking at an electoral map that's going to look a lot like it did, I guess, in 2004 and in 2000, when it really came down to, you know, to one or two states. There's every indication that's how the 2012 election is going to turn out. It'll be like Ohio or Indiana or whatever. And, you know, the idea that that coming out for gay marriage right now might stir a backlash. You know, that white working class that we always hear about, this White House has always seemed particularly sensitive to that. So everything that they've done so far suggests after 2012 he'll say something, but certainly not before.
Okay, Steve, thinking of your bank account, I hope you're right. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
We hope to speak to you soon. Steve Kornacki, news editor of Salon.com. You're going to find a link to his article on the 2012 biggest political red herrings at wordofmouthradio.org. Now, coming up, the puppets. Suddenly back on film and stage, we're going to speak with the co-founder of Waka Waka Productions. Their puppet show Baby Universe is at the Hop this weekend. Stay with us for an update on an old art form when Word of Mouth continues.